a disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I hope you will. Fuma, no. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchie. Hope is out this week, but joining me for our double feature discussion of two films from long ago, Akira and X-1999, the movie. I know, right? joining me, it's Erin Dearden. She's a longtime friend of the show. You can find her YouTube channel is youtube.com/strawberrykey. Erin, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Zach.
So when you sent your email in, because we, you know, whenever we do these single episode or single show or single movie podcasts, we always put out a call. It's like, hey, who, you know, if you'd like to be part of this discussion, let us know. And, you know, we get a few submissions and, yours said that you'd spent a lot of time in high school obsessing over X.
Oh yes. And that's probably a bit of an understatement. It was X. It was a lot of things Clamp in general. I think a lot of fans of my generation probably went through that phase.
The Clamp phase, yeah.
Yeah. I think I might have gotten out of it around the time Tsubasa was starting. That's a little bit after I started to realize, oh, wait, maybe Clamp isn't all they're cracked up to be.
You saved yourself. You saved yourself. Yep. Tsubasa is like the I feel like Tsubasa is the ultimate Clamp work that also destroyed Clamp.
Yes, I would agree with that completely.
Yeah.
they already had issues with their, like, obsession with their own little Clampiverse, and that was just the, well, the Akira-style writhing mass of what, of everything that was wrong with all of that.
Right. Okay, so I guess up front, we'll start with X, which I personally feel, at least for discussion purposes, is more interesting to talk about than Akira, just because Akira has been discussed to death.
And,
we actually
in anime circles, in film circles, in science fiction circles, everywhere.
Yeah, if they talk about anime at all in an academic format, if anime comes up, if cyberpunk comes up, if dystopian sci-fi comes up, Akira is in there. But, you know, we weren't going to do Akira until I put it in a user poll saying, like, hey, what should we cover for the next show? And it was number one, you know, by a fair margin. And I think that's just because, oh, Akira, like, everyone's got to click on it, which is totally
it's a common point of reference for a lot of people, either on the outskirts of the anime fandom or deep within it.
Yeah, and, you know, I hadn't seen it in at least 5 years, maybe six, 7 mm-hmm. years. So I was looking forward to revisiting it, but X, I hadn't seen in forever. And normally when we talk about these things, we like to discuss sort of how we came to it first. And so I want to know, like, what was your first experience with that film?
With the film? I can't even remember. I feel like everything X kind of came upon me all at once. I think it might have started with the original editions of the manga that came out in English when they were titled X-1999. I had a few of those volumes when they were still flipped and everything. And I was drawn in, predictably, by the pretty character designs that are designed to appeal to teenage girls, but also by how weirdly grotesque and violent it was, which is something I don't think I expected when I picked it up.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I was just like, what is this? And why is it so gross? So I went and sought everything related to it I could find, which included the movie. At the time, I don't think I appreciated it fully. I don't know how much there is to appreciate on certain fronts, but still, I felt like there was definitely a lot missing compared to the manga, obviously. But I was still sort of fascinated with it, the same way I was fascinated with something like the Utena movie, say, where there's The plot is kind of incomprehensible, but the visual aspect of it is enough to keep you coming back and just, like, poring over it. Like, wow, this scene, look at how they animated this, or this is such a wild, trippy idea, that kind of thing. And I think I might have even used it in a couple school projects. I did a few video editing things in high school, say for editing short promos or whatnot. I did a sort of a promo for our local anime organization that involved clips from the movie that I put together. And then I left it alone for a long time because I sort of filed it away in my head with my Clamp obsession as that was waning. As like, oh, that was just that weird movie that didn't really have a point but had some nice animation. And I didn't come back to it at all until basically yesterday. And yeah, we'll get into that, I suppose. But yeah.
I mean, when you said like, well, I used it in some video editing projects, and I think like just everyone in the late 90s used it because most of the movie is just contextless eye candy, like sort of psychosexual, super violent head trip imagery.
Yeah, like, you could just like construct any kind of like music video that and it would make about as much sense as most of the movie, I think.
Like, I feel like if you took out all of the dialogue scenes, you would be left with a pretty good music video. Like, you wouldn't know what it means, but maybe it would be like a Guns N' Roses video and you just have no fucking idea what's happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is actually formative for me. Believe it or not, X the movie was the first thing I ever saw fan subbed, the first time I ever went to anime club in high school.
Oh wow.
And I went to a college anime club in high school. This was like, so literally this is like formative years for Zach. Like, so I was just getting into anime. I had just discovered Tenchi on like a VHS of Tenchi in like a Best Buy or something. Like, I moved from manga to anime over the course of like a month or two. Once I found those VHS tapes, then I started getting into anime, and I found that we had an anime store in Tucson, Arizona, where I grew up. The store had flyers for an anime club screening of X that was happening that night. I went with my friend to the screening. It was a subtitled copy that they had subtitled themselves off of the freshly released Laserdisc. Mm-hmm. I had fucking no idea what was going on. But I can say it changed my life. I mean, I'm doing this for a living still, like, almost 20 years later.
Yeah, like, I can kind of relate in that it wasn't my first thing, but I think I underestimate exactly how formative X was for me as a fan, just because I like to ignore the part of me that existed back then that was sort of would accept anything that was thrown my way, but right. It really was a huge influence on how I consumed media, how I created media, and some ideas about fiction and narrative moving forward. It's kind of, I don't know, it's interesting reexamining it from the point of where I am now.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like the movie like was a little bit responsible for the aesthetic that I wound up gravitating towards as a teenager. And who wouldn't, right? Because it's all like bloody rain and she's crucified on the wires and there's an ocean of blood. And like,
it's got demon wings and angel wings, man. Yeah. There's duality all up in the shit.
Yeah, like, and there's like the one cute anime boy with white angel wings and then the one with black. And like, which one of us, ladies? Because that'll tell us what about your personality. Like, it's super 90s. Like, it is the 90s, this fucking thing.
The 90s was the heyday of, like, feathers in anime, I feel like. Just feathers everywhere.
Yeah, which is a major Clamp thing. So I saw this movie, and I remember people being confused by it, but the implosion scene got a huge round of applause, and people were blown away by the animation, but they didn't know what the fuck was going on. You know, in hindsight, especially having watched it again, and I too watched it again just yesterday, it makes perfect sense because I've read the manga. Like, I've read a lot of that manga. And the manga barely concludes. It's not like it really wraps up, right? I mean, they took, 50 billion years to finish it, and they didn't really finish it. Or did they?
They didn't, yeah. I think they got to volume 18, and they had planned up to volume 21. I actually just started rereading a bit of the manga again yesterday. I think I read the first omnibus and the last omnibus just to see, like, get an idea again. And that last omnibus ends basically with, like, evil Hinoto keeping her good self trapped in something, like, and now it finally begins.
Now.
Fake cut to black.
Like, after 18 fucking volumes. So, I mean, it's, so the story of this film, it's not a story. It is the end of the story. This is supposed to be the end of X, right? That's what the movie basically is.
Yeah, well, it's... Yeah, I think it's more like a compression of X that also happens to include an ending, but yeah, basically.
I mean, it's a compression, but they don't spend any time in the characters. Like, the way this movie starts, so we should describe the plot as best we can. Basically, Kamui is chosen one. He started life as, like, he was, like, an orphan that was, like, adopted by the Monos, right? Fuma and Katori.
His mother was around. His mother was around.
But he wasn't, they were just friends, right?
Yeah, well, with the Monos?
It's not like his brother. He treats him like his brother, but it's not like his...
I think it might have been the Monos who were adopted. Like, their mother died in horrible, gory, bloody fashion years ago, and they were taken in by the shrine monk or whatever.
Okay, right. And so they were friends, and he's like, you promised to protect us. Anyway, the movie starts with Kamui's mother pulling a big, gross, like, blood and what looks kind of like semen sword, like, out of her gut... And she's naked. And she goes, go to Tokyo.
Which is a spectacular way to open your movie.
Yeah, like a travel brochure would have sufficed, right? And then she blows apart, because of course she does. And Kamui goes to Tokyo. And then you're introduced to like 50 billion characters. None of which, you kind of get their names like once or twice.
Yeah. And it's so much worse in the dub too, because I think in the sub... they just show you everybody first, but the dub, they like hastily be like, and this is so-and-so, and this is so-and-so, and this is so-and-so, and this is so-and-so.
Yeah, right, yeah. And anyway, so the whole story is there's two forces that are vying for the dominion of Earth, the dragons of Earth, who are ostensibly trying to bring nature back and like basically wipe out humanity because they're destroying the planet. And then the dragons of heaven, who are trying to save humanity. Kamui is the leader of the Dragons of Heaven, and wouldn't you know it, his best friend slash pseudo-brother Fuma winds up being the leader of the Dragons of Earth.
And, oh, the ironies.
Yes. Oh, the irony. And so each side has kind of a leader. There's like a, not really a leader, but like a, what am I trying to say here? What would you call
dream
those two
seer,
ladies?
Sage, whatever.
Yeah, sage. They each have like a sage. There's Hinoto, who lives in the Diet building. And she controls the Dragons of Heaven and tells them what to do. And then there's the evil lady who, I don't know her name. Do you know her name?
Fucking evil McEvil Tits.
Yeah, right. McEvil Tits. That's the name. She controls the Dragons of Earth. Eventually she says, like, she doesn't actually care about the Earth at all, so I don't really know what her motivation is.
They, like, reveal it in, like, the last 5 minutes, and it's like, oh, I guess? Okay.
Right. Anyway, they all fight. Most of them die immediately. Actually, I think everybody dies. And Kamui winds up beheading Fuma at the very end. And then that famous X song plays. And then that's it. That's the movie. Yeah, nothing else happens in that movie. It is just a series of disconnected head trip footage, head trip imagery, and a lot of bloody violence. And, you know, not much confusion. I have to admit, like, this movie has a reputation for being really horribly confusing. But if you're familiar with the story at least a little bit before you go in, it does make sense. It's not incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm. And even if you don't really, it's not so much, I think, confusing as just underwritten and they threw, like, too many proper nouns at the wall.
Yeah,
like,
right.
as long as you remember what everybody looks like, it's not hard to keep track of where they're all going.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think my big takeaway from this was, like, well, I can totally see why this was a huge thing in the 90s, because it sort of encapsulates everything that was popular in the 90s. I mean, that particular aesthetic that would eventually sort of become Fujoshi culture, and the, like, super, like, really glossy, pretty, like, over-the-top animation, because the movie's gorgeous. Like, it looks great. There's not a bad-looking scene in it.
Well, there's a couple moments of, like, kind of janky animation, but overall,
well,
you're
talking about tiny, like, tiny little bits.
Like, little bits. Like, kind of weird running sequences in a couple places.
Yeah, but the movie looks fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And hyperviolence, which was a thing in the 90s. So, it's kind of all this stuff blended into one. I feel kind of like... You know, if we're going to draw a thematic through line here, as even though it wasn't anywhere near as successful or zeitgeisty and didn't influence culture anywhere near as much, I kind of feel like X, especially given its reputation and given its pedigree, it's kind of like the 90s Akira, a little bit.
Like, kind of, yeah.
Like draw the, I feel like that's not a totally unreasonable statement to make. If you're not comparing legacy or influence, if you're just saying, well, in a way, these two films like have quite a bit in common if you watch them back to back. Like, it was totally unintentional, but this turned out to be kind of an interesting double feature because of how much the two films have in common.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Like, they both do have a lot to do with the fact that it seems like, what is it? The end of the world has a lot to do with youth, as it turns out, in both cases, it seems like.
Right.
And I don't know. Sorry, I'm losing my through line just a sec.
Yeah, no, it's fine. You know, it's just, I'm not saying like deep thematic connections or anything like that, but on kind of a surface level, you know, in terms of introduced a lot of people to anime, introduced mm-hmm. a lot of people maybe to an aesthetic that they really liked, kind of encapsulated a lot of the design sensibilities and trends at the time in that particular creative media, blew a lot of people's minds a little bit, probably introduced a bunch of teenagers to like the idea of super violent animation for adults, and was kind of confusing and based on a manga you probably should have read a little bit before you watched the movie. So,
yeah,
I don't know,
although I will admit to this day, I've never read the Akira manga. It's one of my shames.
Oh, yeah. No, I've only read a few volumes of it. I've read like two omnibuses of Akira. Anyway, we'll get to Akira. But I mean, so like, you know, now having seen the whole thing, I mean, thematically, there's almost nothing to talk about with X, right? I mean, there's very little to say.
Yeah, like the most you can say is that either if fate is real, then it's an asshole. And if it's not, then playing into it is stupid and bad things will happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's so much like basically the way the movie plays out. Kamui isn't that much of a character. He's just like, well, I gotta save Kotori and humanity. And then basically Fuma becomes the big bad guy. He just starts slaughtering everybody, becomes completely consumed with the idea of having all this power. And that's kind of it. And he goes from a little bit confused about his role in all of this to full on, I'm going to murder literally everyone, psychopath in like a couple scenes. It's really fast.
I think I remember it's a lot clearer in the manga that like the trigger for him changing personality is like the definitive moment when Kamui's like, yes, I am a dragon of heaven, and then like something within him changes, but that isn't shown in the movie. It just sort of one scene he's himself and the next scene later on he's I'm going to kill you all.
Yeah, right. It doesn't help matters that they basically use Kamui. It's not only the name of the lead character, it's also the interchangeable name for the prophesized chosen one who will decide this battle.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes a thing where Fuma's like, no, it's me, I'm Kamui. And it's like, you didn't need to confuse this like further. Like, it gets more confusing as it goes on. But yeah, I don't know. Mostly it's just kind of pretty. The thing is, like, what do you think the legacy of this film is? Do you think it's still worth watching? I mean, having seen it again, like, would you recommend it to anyone who hadn't seen it like 20 years ago and is kind of feeling nostalgic?
I think I'd recommend it from a technical perspective, sure. Hands down. Like, if you want to know more about the history of anime as a thing or even animation as a medium, this is where the industry was in the 90s, and this was sort of the peak of their power, I suppose. Maybe also if you're interested in the filmography of Rintaro, I'll admit I haven't seen a lot of his films, but he's definitely someone I would call an auteur worth studying.
Yeah,
from what I do know about him.
I mean, I've seen plenty of Rintaro stuff. I'm not really a fan. This one was, I would consider it to be one of his more comprehensible films, even though it's not, like, most people know it for being confusing. I think it's pretty understandable. Rintaro's made a lot of confusing shit.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you're right. Like from a legacy standpoint, you know, technically this is something to see. I mean, this is a big budget theatrical event film that is absolutely worth seeing if you're interested in the development of Japanese animation as an art form. I'm just
but
not...
But if you're... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'm just not so sure it has any value beyond that.
Yeah, like the only other reason I would recommend watching it is if maybe you went through a clamp phase when you were younger and you want to go back and feel twinges of your former self as you watch it.
Yeah, right.
Just like, oh, I remember when I was super into the whole like one-winged angel, one-winged demon kind of thing, or pretty boys standing on top of worlds.
Like, do teenagers still go through that phase, the one-winged angel phase?
Just with different shows, I think.
Because I can't tell if it was, if that's still a phase, or if that's just if you were a teenager in the late 90s. Because that was such a thing in the late 90s. Like, Final Fantasy VII, X, Angel Sanctuary, like, all this shit. Especially if you're in anime and manga and, like, Japanese video games. Like, the one-winged angel or angel with black, one black and one white wing. And then they kind of carried over into, like, Kingdom Hearts.
I think so, because I don't, maybe not in that specific form, but I think a lot of teenagers go through a phase where they're, like, really interested in finding out different things about, say, I don't know, religious or mythical symbolism or creatures or something like that. And I don't know whether it's angels or whether, what would it be right now, I guess. It's probably, I don't know, would monster girls count or something like that? That's more for boys than girls. But
for boys. Yeah.
No, but yeah, like, I think a lot of teenagers go through a period of fascination with that kind of imagery that's higher than themselves and seems cool.
Right.
Whether they really understand it or not.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And from that perspective, I guess, yeah, it's worth checking out. I think it's interesting because, you know, as I was watching this film, I started thinking about Clamp and, like, their place in anime fandom, which I don't feel they really have one. I feel like Clamp is over, and that's probably harsh, but, I mean, what was their last thing? It was, like, Kobato, which, insofar as I can tell, no one cares about.
As far as I can tell, Clamp's place in the current anime scene is largely Cardcaptor Sakura at this point. That's, like, the only thing that a large number of people still look back on fondly and still buy a lot of merchandise for that I can find.
Yeah, right. That seems to be their most lasting work.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Because when it came out, everyone was like, oh, well, it's no X. And now, fucking no one knows what X is. Even if they made that, like, mediocre, TV series. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, the X TV series?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still have the box set. I liked it when it came out.
That big, like, faux leather thing?
Yeah. I think I've tried to get rid of that thing, but I don't know. But yeah, no, I remember that was, like, the first digital fan sub that I watched, like, close to as it was coming out in Japan, and I just thought that was the coolest thing at the time, watching my little Real Player files.
Yeah, right. No, I remember.
I bawled like a baby in the last episode, and for that reason, I haven't really gone back to it since then, because I know if I go back to it now, then it's not going to affect me anywhere near that level.
Yeah, I mean, the TV show I remember being not as ponderous as the movie was, but I just... The movie also was the only thing that captured the look of the manga and kind of really brought it to life. The TV anime was just too cheap.
It was a DigiPaint thing, right?
Yeah, it was DigiPaint. Like, anime didn't look particularly good in that era anyway.
Like, even, they had Yoshiaki Kawajiri on that thing, and he couldn't make that thing look good.
Yeah, you could tell it was his character designs, too.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. I know that, like, X just seems like kind of a franchise maybe forgotten by time, and I can't necessarily say that I think that's horrible. Like, it's not particularly memorable. Like, outside of the eye candy, like, images that are kind of seared into your brain maybe a little bit. I don't know. It's kind of a museum piece, a cultural sort of an oddity. It's like, well, here's this lavishly animated thing that kind of doesn't make sense if you're not already familiar with the story, but it was kind of brought over as this, like, here, anime. Like, here's anime. Like, on a tape. Here you go.
It doesn't feel like the kind of thing that would happen nowadays, honestly.
No. Yeah. No, absolutely not. Yeah, no way, no. I guess, like, on the list of, like, well, if you've never seen any anime, here's the top five movies. X, I don't think, would be on that list. But I would probably put it on maybe, like, a top 15 or something like that. I think it would go in there somewhere, just for the artistry of it, if nothing else.
Yeah. At the very least, I would say if you can, find some clips or something, watch, like, the first 10 to 15 minutes or so, because I do think that's the strongest part of the movie, when it's just more sort of dreamlike and less concrete with all the characters they're trying to introduce.
Well, it is dream sequences through most of it. Like, most of the film is dream sequences that are just trippy, like, crazy. look, he's in a bubble and now he's underwater, but he's not in water. And then there's an ocean of blood and a metal crucifix and, yeah, like weird psychedelic imagery that just happens.
But even with so many dream sequences in the film, I don't know, I feel like that first 10 minutes is more like what the movie could have been. Like, I was thinking throughout the movie what my problem with it really was. And I think the problem was that it felt like the entire situation should feel like it's bigger than them and hard to wrap your mind around. And that's how it felt for the first little while. But as they started focusing on all the other characters and their relationships that they obviously can't go into much detail on, it kind of bogged itself down. And it probably would have been a much stronger film if it retained that sense of mystery and this force that's bigger than yourself driving everything. Maybe keep it focused more on the Katori, Fuma, Kamui trio, develop them more, and then you can sort of really more feel that these forces that are bigger than yourself are just, sorry, I don't know, I lost my train of thought there, but you can sort of get where I'm going.
Yeah, no, I get where you're going. It, I mean, the biggest problem with the film, you know, a sort of badly written script aside, is the fact that there has absolutely no emotional impact whatsoever, mm-hmm. because they introduce these 15 characters right out of the gate and they all just immediately start murdering each other. You have no idea why you're supposed to care about any of it. And they show you really crucial character information and backstory at the very end. So stuff that the reason that you're supposed to care about the rift between Kamui and Fuma happens in the film and you do see it, but it happens at the very, very end, right when he's about to behead him.
Yeah, like, it seems like, I think the point where it cut off early in the film is they have that little, like, ghost flashback to watching them play hide and seek. And that felt like it could have been the beginning of showing, like, oh, this is how these characters were in the past and they had this deep friendship, but they really didn't go into it beyond that until the end of the movie. Yeah,
it felt like, well, this would have been nice if you'd have told me this earlier. Or, like, in the first act, if you set up these relationships or gave these characters... let me just cut down the cast a little bit so that there's only, like, three dragons of heaven and three dragons of earth, and that's it.
Or even just keep all the dragons, if you really want to, like, please all the fans, but, like, keep them, like, on the extreme periphery. They're just figures, basically, not even characters.
Yeah, in the background or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just
enough to get the scale, but not enough to, like, make you think that you have to pay attention to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a couple of different ways they could have made it better. But frankly, you know, there's just no way to condense a story that has that many moving parts and that many characters into an hour and a half movie without, like, they basically just said, okay, here's the end. Like, this is the end of the film. This is the end of the story. Everybody just dies and then Kamui wins. But at what cost? The end.
Yep.
So, yeah, okay. Anyway, X. So the other thing we watched was this little movie called Akira that you may or may not have heard of. this came out in 1988 and it's based on a manga and everybody knows what Akira is. And like I said at the beginning, like, I was reluctant to talk about this because what is there left to say about Akira that has not been said? It has all been said. The biggest observation I have walking away from Akira now is that the reputation it has for being confusing is no longer warranted and hasn't been for 15 years since they redubbed it.
Oh, for sure.
The movie's not confusing at all. And I understand it was confusing when it had that streamlined dub that sucked and didn't make any fucking sense. But
and
since
I'm,
they
rewrote I'm glad. It, I never saw that version, honestly.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, since they rewrote it, and their re-release happened a long-ass time ago, I bought it in a steel case at a Suncoast. That's how long ago that was.
Yeah, like the version I rewatched, like, the version I rewatched for this podcast is the 2001 Jenny on disc that is like, it has new dub plastered all over the back of it.
Yeah, right. I watched this has been re-released a few times. I watched the Oniamis Blu-ray, not the Funimation one, the Bandai Visual one that got released here when they were doing like Pat Labor 2 and losing money and failing. Like they put out Akira. I bet that's the only thing that they had that ever sold. Yeah, so this is a legend. This movie's a legend. It's based on the manga by Katsuhiro Otomo. It's a pretty straightforward political sort of allegory about modern Japan. It is a similar story to what is... The similar stories are told in Terror in Resonance and Penguin Drum about the military ghosts of Japan's past manipulating the youth of today into repeating their mistakes and maintaining a sort of corruption, a level of corruption even over today's generation. And all three of these things are sort of hopeful about what the next generation can do to break free of the control of Japan's past. And it's a very straightforward political allegory. I mean, what did you think of the political stuff? Did that ever? I mean, the first time you saw it, did that stuff even register with you? Because now it seems like the most obvious thing in the world.
Yeah. No, unfortunately, no, it didn't the very first time I watched it. I think the first time I became aware of it was I had... Was it the Anime Encyclopedia, the Complete Anime Guide, I think it was called. It was like that book that Trish Ledoux put together back in the day.
Right.
And I saw these like little pixelated gray images of Akira in that book and was curious and remained curious for years after that and heard everyone hype it up. And when I finally saw it, it was on the shittiest VHS copy on the shittiest TV. So I wasn't blown away like I should have been. And I sort of thought, that wasn't worth the hype at the time.
Yeah.
And it was a while until I rewatched it again and got a better sense of what that movie actually is visually and thematically. And I probably also didn't watch it at the right age. I didn't understand any of the political stuff at that age. And now watching it, I feel like the political stuff is probably more relevant than ever. It felt like a lot of the demonstrations and whatnot were out of any kind of news headline that you would see coming out nowadays, just with more cyberpunkness.
I mean, the movie's prescience is a little eerie. I mean, it does take place in 2019, a year before the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, as has been pointed out a million times. Japan's going through kind of a right-wing phase right now, so it's a little prescient. I don't know. Like, for me, the big takeaway was the political stuff. It's like, okay, this is very obvious, straightforward metaphor. The other thing was that every time I watch this movie, and I've seen it maybe half a dozen times. I haven't seen it that much compared to a lot of other people.
Yeah, I think I've seen it maybe three or four times in my life.
Yeah, and I do feel like you do kind of need to see it twice in order to really take it all in. I feel like the way the script is structured, like the idea that this is a confusing movie definitely is a fault of the structure of the film itself, because they tell you stuff that they show you a scene and then the context for that scene, they don't tell you until later. So you'll have something happen. They'll explain it two or three scenes later in a different context. And you really have to be paying attention in order to kind of put all these pieces together. Ultimately, it's not that tough. But I do you feel like the structure is a little convoluted, like unnecessarily kind of clumsy or a little awkward?
I didn't necessarily get that sense watching it now, but that might just be because, again, I've seen it before. So maybe I was subconsciously filling in the blanks as I was watching. So so maybe that's why I didn't feel that way.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I guess I was sort of looking for like, well, why do people think this is so confusing? The dub is that it can't just be that dub. It can't just be that. But you know, maybe it is. I don't know. I felt like
it might just be the dub. Then again, who nowadays, other than the old fogies, remembers that dub anymore?
Most people. It was formative. I mean, if you were a kid or a teenager in the late 80s and early and the 90s, that streamlined dub was what you saw. I mean, 15 years or so until it was re-recorded and made more sense.
Right, so, but does that, like, there's all that been time, lots of people have seen it since then and feel the same way.
This is true.
Yeah, I feel like maybe it might just be, like, there's just a lot of... like a barrage of information or something like that that a lot of people aren't prepared for when they go into the movie. Maybe they've just heard it's this trippy shit, man, you gotta watch this. Yeah. But they're not prepared to, like, pay attention to all the, like, political intrigue and conspiratorial government whatevers that are also in the movie.
Well, like I said, I think the first time you watch it, it is kind of confusing. I think you kind of put it together as you're watching it, but the second time, it'll make perfect sense, and you will be able to sort of take it all in. And, you know, one thing that really struck me about this was it's so easy to see how this movie blew minds back then.
Because
it is an incredible visual, like, feat. Like, it's like, I can imagine it's 1988 and you're watching this in a theater. It surpasses any piece of science fiction you've seen, like any kind of science fiction imagery. Even if you've been watching like shitty like Ralph Bakshi movies or something, like even if you've seen adult animation before, you still haven't seen anything like this. And to wit, like kind of nothing still looks like Akira. Like a lot of stuff looks like Akira because it was so influential, but I mean, nothing else looks quite exactly like it. Like it is such
a thing. A lot of that has to do with the attention to detail and the amount of money they had to work with to make that come to life.
Yeah, right. So this was a huge budget movie for the time. They had a lot of time to work on it, and it was this big event movie. And the movie's noted for being like sometimes it's animated on ones, right? Like that's kind of the legend. And the score is like so complicated that it's got this like that oral whatever they call it, that weird sound system where it's like, oh, there's actually like 16 different tracks on this and they interact with your brain in a different way. And it's like, okay, whatever. Like, I like the soundtrack, but.
And even like the backgrounds, I know I've seen breakdowns of like just how many layers there are to every like city background is like a painting masterpiece in and of itself that you only see a fraction of.
Right. Yeah. And it totally belongs. Like, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Richard Williams movie, the Thief and the Cobbler.
I haven't seen it, but I've seen clips from it. Yeah.
This movie. Well, that's sort of a legendary, like unfinished film. That was this total labor of love. That's just animated within an inch of its life. Like it's just kind of animation porn. Like it's just showing off. And it's really neat to watch. The story is a little, you know, whatever. But Akira is a little bit the same way, where it's this, but it's, except it's a finished, like, completed work that people have been able to enjoy for the last, you know, however many years, and almost 30 years. And so it kind of goes in with those other super ambitious, flawed works of artistic genius that made a huge impact on animation fans, and in Akira's case, the world. Like, it's an extremely influential movie.
Yeah, I don't think it's an overestimation to say that, no.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, the story of this thing, just to break it down in case we need to. Basically, it's 2019, Neo-Tokyo is in political turmoil after World War III basically happens. And there's a biker gang, and one of the kids, Tetsuo, has a run-in with an old baby. An old baby, and then he gets psychic powers. Anyway, as it turns out, humanity has like tapped into, I guess, like the idea is that all the memories and energy from everything that ever lived exists as like an energy source, and they figured out how to tap into it, and they imbued a kid named Akira with it, and that blew up in their faces literally. And so now it's however many years later, 20 years later, and they're trying it again. And Tetsuo gets sort of accidentally imbued with this stuff, and he goes power mad and crazy, and it's up to his friend Kaneda to stop him and try and save everybody. That's kind of it. That's basically what happens. There's not much else to it.
Yeah, there's like all these other things going on with like political dissidents and terrorist and rebel groups and whatnot. Nobody's happy with the government, and all that stuff is kind of it's there, but it's sort of secondary to the main through line of Tetsuo and Kaneda and the psychics and whatnot.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you know, all of this, yeah, it's all playing out against a very political backdrop. And yeah, I mean, I don't know, you know, talking about Akira, like it's one of those things where it's like this has just been discussed to death, so I wonder what the interesting question, like what's left that's interesting about Akira. And I think the question is Akira still relevant? Is it still something that anime fans need to see? Is it still vital in that way? I mean, do you think it is?
I think it is, from both a technical standpoint and for, like you said, it was extremely prescient in terms of predicting the atmosphere of the country and the world going forward. It's definitely still a resonant story of people. Like, there's still that relatable story of a person who has an inferiority complex, and the person they idolize slash hate. I think that's it's apart from some of the pacing problems, I think it's still very much deserving of the title of a seminal film.
Yeah, I think you're right. I honestly do feel like Akira is a museum piece. It's a really impressive technical feat. Politically, it is still remarkably relevant even today. But it doesn't look like anime anymore.
It just looks like itself more than any particular thing that it belongs to.
Yeah, other things look like Akira. Akira doesn't look like anything but Akira. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to put it. I'm not sure I would put it on like a you have to see this list of stuff. Like that list for me now is like Evangelion, Madoka Magica, maybe Attack on Titan, maybe not Attack on Titan. But that list is kind of short in terms of like, well, here's the anime you need to see. I'm not sure
I would say it would still deserve to be on there, if only because it's a one and done. You don't have to like invest a lot of time in it to see it and say that you've seen, okay, this is this formative work that's still really technically impressive and still has some things to say.
I feel like it's kind of the godfather of anime and not like,
yeah, I think that's probably good.
Not in the way that the godfather is relevant to film fandom, but in that is this storied, famous, venerated film that everyone calls the greatest or one of the greatest anime films of all time, but a lot of modern fans haven't seen it, aren't familiar with it. And if somebody could be really into movies and they'll be like, you know what, I've never seen The Godfather. Like, that comes up a lot whenever I talk to like big fans of films. And whenever I talk to anime fans, I mean, Daryl Surratt talks about this a lot, where he'll be holding a panel on like violent deaths in anime or whatever, and he'll say like, who in here has seen Akira? And like two hands go up. So like, new fans haven't seen it. So I guess, yeah, you know what? I guess I think new fans absolutely should see Akira. I think it's still a really important film. I'm not hesitant to say, but it's on a shelf in a museum. Like, it's not like this.
Yeah, like you're not obligated to be like, oh my god, this is one of my favorites of all time. Yeah, that sort of thing.
Like being
you should see it for history's sake, for context sake, for going for a while and maybe leaving it there.
Yeah, it never stops being visually impressive. I really loved all the hand-drawn mechanical stuff. That stuff is so cool.
That stuff is very much sort of lost to anime history at this point, it feels like, in a lot of ways.
Oh, Redline did it again.
Redline was Redline, and what else has really been that? Right.
That was it, though, and that cost them dearly, and then that movie cost a whole lot of people a whole lot of money, so...
Yeah, other than that, it's all kind of like cheap CG, kind of, for all the mechanical stuff for most things, I think.
But when it's hand-drawn, man, it achieves this very particular aesthetic that is immediately impressive. Like, there's a scene where, like, he's on that kind of, it's kind of like an MRI machine.
Yeah, like, oh god,
it moves apart, and there's, like, 50 moving pieces, and these, like, rings around him that are all moving independently. And you're like, fuck, how did they animate? Like, I know they drew it, but damn, like, just the technical ability on display is incredible. And it's something just as simple as a fucking MRI machine. And they went way out of their way to make it, like, the most impressive piece of animation.
That alone is it's a testament to the skill of the animators, and again, also to the amount of money the anime industry had in the 80s.
Yeah, right. How did you feel about the character animation?
I thought it was still really impressive. I thought some of the characters had a little bit of same face problems, not in the way that most anime have same face problems, but just in the sense that all of Katsuhiro Otomo's characters kind of look alike.
Yeah, that's Otomo. The only guy who draws like Otomo is Toriyama.
Yeah.
And Toriyama has his own style that's very Toriyama, but you can see there's a line between the two of them.
But in terms of like the actual animation, it's still probably one of the more impressive pieces in terms of like details of movement and little ticks that everybody has and the way mouths move. Like, I think this is one of the rare anime projects where they did the voice acting first and animated after.
Yeah. And you know what? I got to admit, the character animation seems like it's over animated. It's overdone. Everyone's overacting. That's the way it comes across to me. They are, mugging and grinning and doing too much in every scene. There's no subtlety to the movement. It kind of reminds me of like DreamWorks character animation.
I think that's fair. Although I think there's still enough scenes where they're mostly just standing there, like say when they go down to the underground facility and they're looking at the Akira thing to make up for any scenes where they're doing too much with it, maybe?
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree with you. I'm not saying it looks bad or anything. It's just, to me, it was distracting because no one ever just smiles. They have to grin, cock their chin up and like point at you. And like,
that's fair. I don't know. I found it charming in that it seemed to give people a little bit more character. It's definitely more character than you would see in like anything in X, for example.
Yeah.
You can feel like the character of even someone like, I don't know, fucking, what's the short guy, one who's at the end of the movie. With
I know
them.
Who you're talking about. Yeah.
I don't know his name, but I feel like I know that character because of the way he moves and the way he looks.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. I mean, I like watching this. They do have like so much. There is a lot of character building just in the animation. It I'm not saying it looks bad. I'm just saying.
No, yeah, no.
To
I
my
understand.
Eye, it's distracting because it's like, oh, all right, you don't have to move that much. Like, okay, it's nitpick.
Oh yeah, no, that's fair. I'm just giving my take on it too. Yeah.
But the other thing is that due to the lip flap, because they animated to the actors. The dub is, I think it. You just can't avoid it sounding like a shitty old dub. Because the lines have to be smashed together. And so you
it,
get...
It comes
you know,
across
they,
more like the dub of a live-action film than for an anime.
Yeah, they read their lines and they're like, hey, I'm not going with you. Oh, no, I'm wearing handcuffs. Like, they cram, like, things together. It sounds like a shitty old dub. And even the new one sounds like a shitty old dub. It's not new anymore, of course, but... The redub from 2001 sounds like a shitty old anime dub. I mean, I prefer watching this in Japanese just because obviously the lip flap matches the dialogue perfectly. It looks great.
Yeah, like in honestly, English, I didn't even go back to the dub for watching it for the podcast. One, I didn't have time, and two, I didn't have the interest. I knew it wasn't going to look good, so I didn't bother.
Yeah, I think in English, it's an uncanny valley, like you said, like watching a live action movie dubbed, which is always awkward. Like, there's just no two ways about it. It's always super awkward. But that's an interesting bit of verisimilitude, like the idea that this is animated so closely to the mouth movements that if you dub it, it's the same effect as watching a live action movie dubbed. That's very interesting. I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, so I guess, you know, Akira still worth your time. I guess. I wonder if it'll ever be like, you know what? It's just old. I wonder if it'll ever get to that point. It's just old. But it's gonna be 30
years old. I think it'll depend
here.
On whether animation ever improves beyond a certain point without just going straight into all CGI.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, the designs of it at this point are so late 80s that it will always be a little bit of a relic just because it is everything that was considered cool in science fiction at that point in time. I mean, it's all heavily Mobius and... Like Mobius influence,
like cyberpunk concepts, and even the concept of just having psychics was a trend for a while there.
Yeah, right. It sure was. Yeah.
Kimiguri Orange Road. Anybody?
Yeah. Espers. Yeah. but yeah, so you know the Blu-ray for this is frequently like $15 on Amazon. If you don't have it, you should probably get it. And it's still a fun movie to watch. Like it still moves like real quick. I feel like the climax is a little drawn out.
Yeah, I felt like I had to, I skipped through a little bit, honestly, like I did a little bit of chapter skipping and fast forwarding towards the end. It was like, all right, just keep going. I know what happens.
They get to the stadium and you're like, okay, now he's going to start turning into the giant monster. And it's like, nope, there's another half an hour before that happens. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, those are the parts that stick out in my mind the most. So I felt like I didn't have to revisit those ones as closely as the early parts of the movie with all the like, the more dialogue-heavy parts that I didn't remember as well.
Well, the other thing for me was, and I discovered this upon rewatching it this time, was that the political allegory is so front and center that the actual plot almost doesn't really matter that much. Like, it's just a political allegory. And the thing is, the political allegory that they're making is super straightforward, and you understand it right away. So once
they've
made
like, I was
point,
thinking while I was watching, it's like, man, I know Zach doesn't like to take anime to World War II, but you can't really avoid it with this one.
Yeah, no, you can't. But, like, to the point where, basically, once they've made their point, and they make their point pretty early on, you're just kind of watching a string of action scenes. Like, the story, you know what they're saying. So you're like, okay, I get it. And it's another hour left of the film or whatever. Yeah, so and they're like story-wise, it's a little inert in the last hour, I think. Because you understand what they're saying politically, and so the rest of this is just plot, and you kind of
know. Yeah, it doesn't really pick up again thematically until they get to more of the stuff with Akira and Tetsuo and Kaneda and their flashbacks and showing how they how their friendship has fallen apart and whatnot.
Yeah, once again, context that would have maybe been better at the beginning of the film.
Hey, right?
So there's
it's
another
like poetry. It rhymes.
See, I think the more you put these two films next to each other, the more they like make sense as a double feature, and the more bizarre similarities. Because before I did this, before I watched them back to back, I never would have said that these two movies had anything in common. Like, aside from nice animation. And they're violent. That's it. But no, they actually have quite a lot in common. It's just fucking weird to think about. That this, like, super, like, maybe the most famous anime film of all time. And, you know, next to, like, Spirited Away. Akira is, like, the most animated, most famous anime movie. Like, Akira.
And then you put it next
to
this other film that's largely been forgotten by time, but
yeah,
is nonetheless sort of the same sort of movie for its era,
yeah,
like you said
right.
before.
Yeah. It's super, super strange. So any final thoughts on Akira?
Not really. I think a lot of it's already been said. We've said, I think, plenty at this point. You should probably see it if you haven't already, but you're not obligated to like, love it to death or anything like that. You can just see it and say you've seen it.
If you're interested in anime, the history of anime, you should watch it. If you're interested in science fiction, you should watch it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in craft of animation, you should totally watch it. And if you just kind of want to see a kick-ass movie, you should watch it, because it is a pretty kick-ass movie. Like, there's
yeah.
so much cool stuff on the screen in Akira at any given time. Like, if I had seen this in 1988 and I was like a teenager, I think my brains just would have been all over the back of the theater.
Yeah.
It would have been like, are you kidding me? Like, I can't believe what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
Like,
I kind of want to see it with a group sometime, because I think I've only ever watched it by myself or with one other person. And I feel like this would play really well with a crowd, especially one who hasn't seen it before.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. That would be fun. Just get a big anime screening, a big like anime convention screening together of just fans who hadn't seen it.
Yeah.
And you wonder how it would play. It would be,
yeah.
It'd be interesting.
Like, I think I remember watching it with my younger brother, and he alone watching it with him, watching him go like, what just happened? What is
yeah.
even all this? Was just highly entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun times. Fun times. Okay. So we did get some Twitter questions about that. Let's see. We got a few on the same kind of line here where someone says, how far can great animation and visuals go to make a weak to passable story watchable? So basically,
about 10 to 15 minutes, I'd say.
You think that's it? Like, you think like that? Like, really cool visuals just straight up don't excuse like crappy storytelling.
I think so, because if it's just the visuals themselves are a mode of storytelling, and if the visuals aren't also telling a story, then yeah, no.
Yeah, I don't
like,
know.
I was actually, while watching X, I felt like I was getting flashbacks to Angel's Egg, of all things, during
oh, wow.
those first 10 to 15 minutes.
I could see that.
And that is a movie that is almost all visuals, but it's absolutely captivating nonetheless, even though you might not understand all of what's going on, because the visuals do so much to tell you things about the world and the characters and the themes that are coming across, whereas with X, all of that seems to devolve after a little while into nothingness, really.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, so I'm such a sucker for cool visuals that I won't like praise the film for being like a great film, but if it's got cool stuff to look at, I'm never gonna be bored, and so therefore it'll be like, no, that was totally worth watching, even though like it had nothing to offer but cool visuals. I'll still be like, yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I think
I'll
the problem with X
like, oh,
is
a terrible
that,
story, but you just kind of want to stare at it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think a lot of the problem with X, too, is there are a bunch of those cool scenes with cool stuff to look at, but there are also scenes in between where mostly it's just characters standing around and talking about the apocalypse, and that gets boring, and you want something cool to happen again.
Yeah, totally. I don't feel like X ever gets boring, though.
I do. I'll disagree with you on there, but we'll leave it there.
I don't think it gets boring. It just goes so quick. It's just like boom, 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 boom. And people are just dying. Like, there's no... It never goes more than like 7 minutes without someone dying.
I don't know. That might just be because I watched it while I was tired. I was just feeling at certain points like, when does Katori's head come off again?
Right, fucking. Yeah. It's so goofy, the way they just cradle the heads, like perfectly preserved heads. It looks so goofy. Okay. Alshari Minako asks, any anime that came after X that's similar but is better? I mean, so other movies that go in the weird sort of animated within an inch of their lives, hyper, like violent and or action, you know, action cartoons. I mean, Redline is the one that comes to mind immediately.
Yeah, but like that's kind of the when you put one. It that way, I guess Redline. Yeah, but they're not really tonally similar.
No, they're not tonally similar. It's just they have the same feel.
Yeah,
there's a similar feel to it.
I think that's fair.
They feel like they go on the same shelf, even though they're not even in the same genre. Like. They feel like
Only other things I can think of are older than X, honestly. Like, again, I feel like Angel's Egg is kind of similar in that it's a cool psychedelic thing to look at that's sort of apocalyptic in tone. I can think of, like, maybe any given Oshii movie, maybe, in certain respects.
I mean, they kind of don't really make movies like this anymore.
No, not at all.
It's not what anime is anymore at all, so...
I don't know. Maybe the Madoka movies? They're not, like, as well animated, but they've got a lot of visually interesting storytelling going on in certain parts of them.
If you're just looking for, like, trippy stuff to look at, sure. Sure. Okay. So, let's see here. The Greatest, he asks, how does X the movie compare to its TV counterpart, especially with their endings adapting a still unfinished manga?
Well, I do know that I remember the ending of the TV show. Spoilers if you haven't seen it, whatever. I remember that Kamui is the one who dies at the end of that show. But he, like, I don't know, sacrifices himself to become the shield that protects the world, and it's largely a happy ending. So it is very, very different in that sense. I don't know. I think it's interesting to have those two as counterpoints to each other. One, like, the most oppressively everybody dies, and one that's, well, some people died, but otherwise it turned out okay, sort of things.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you want the full story, you can totally watch the show. But... I don't know. Like, frankly, like, I wouldn't recommend that show unless you were just totally captivated by the very concept of X. The movie.
Yeah, I'd say read the manga if you're totally interested, because the art is much better and you get basically the same story. And if you're really curious to see how it ends, you can maybe pick up the anime where the manga left off.
Yeah, sure. I mean, frankly, with most Clamp stuff, you're better off just reading the comics. I mean, that's what made him famous.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Why not?
Okay. Carlo Gandro asks, which is less fun, the X movie or the Escaflowne movie? Oh, Escaflowne.
God. Yeah, no, I haven't seen Escaflowne since probably around the time it came out, and I haven't had a desire to go back to it.
Yeah, well, we just rewatched it for the podcast, and it is such a bummer. It's such a bummer. And, like, there's not even that much action in it. Like, it's... okay. That movie was, I used to defend the Escaflowne movie. Now, having revisited it, I'm like, no.
Yeah. No. I think I did start to go back to the Escaflowne TV series recently, so I'm looking forward to finishing that finally. But otherwise, yeah, I'm not hankering to go back to that movie.
Yeah. Anime Wondering asks, which side in X do you feel has a stronger argument, saving the Earth in an ecological sense versus maintaining the status quo? So who would you be, a dragon of heaven or of earth?
I don't know. I feel like they tried to have this, like, oh, both sides have a point kind of thing, but it's hard to take the one side seriously when they're led by, again, evil McEvil tits over there. And one side involves mass genocide, so I don't know.
Well, I mean, one side is trying to save humanity, right? So that's the one I'm going to stay with because I'm a human being. So
I think ideally you would pick the side that saves humanity, but also try to fix the shit that humanity's trying to pull, I guess. I don't
know. Both sides are wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, yeah, go ahead.
Riri Dead asks, out of the three big anime movies that came out in 1988, Akira, My Neighbor Totoro, Grave of the Fireflies, which is your favorite? I mean, Akira is my favorite of those three.
I think I would say, yeah, because one, I haven't seen Grave of the Fireflies, which is, don't tell anyone. It's one of my movie shames. I haven't seen it.
Tell anyone. Only the people listening will know.
Only all you people out on the internet, yes. And My Neighbor Totoro is nice, but that's kind of all it is to me.
Yeah, Totoro is one of those things. It's very cute, but it doesn't really capture my heart like it does for a lot of people. I like Totoro, but Akira.
Yeah, the most I remember it for is like watching it in Japanese class and being like, "Oh, this is fun," and then leaving it there. And yeah. Now the only thing I think of it when I think of it now is I work at a local hobby shop and our store is currently full of Totoro plushes, so it's like a merchandising machine mainly to me at this point.
Incompetent Crit asks, would you call X-1999 the summation of Clamp's ideas as a group? Well, it definitely repeats a lot of their themes.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has a lot of feathers and a lot of stories.
A lot of feathers. Like, a lot of surface-level playing with the idea of duality. A lot of their, like, weird shared universe sort of thing going on with the Tokyo Babylon and the Clamp Detective crossovers in the manga.
Right. Yeah. yeah.
Not knowing necessarily where their stories are going before they start them.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it definitely seems like that. The thing is, if you directly compare it to a lot of their stuff, you're like, well, the stories don't really have that much in common. I think X has most in common with Tsubasa, where it's a billion mm-hmm. characters, the story's unnecessarily convoluted, it's full of feathers and shit. And
but goddamn, is it pretty.
Yeah, it's super pretty. And that kind of explains the appeal of it.
Yeah. And to a certain degree, especially if you're like reading the manga, you can get into like the characters and their relationships and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, totally. Okay. Also from Incompetent Crit, do you think Akira being the original gateway anime helped or harmed anime's reputation in the West? Well, I mean, you know, you kind of have to ask the question, would anime have had a foothold here if it didn't have Akira as its kind of Trojan horse, I guess? Like, I don't want to insinuate anything with that, but it was kind of the original thing that pulled a lot of people into anime. So, I mean, it's hard to imagine a world where that wasn't the case.
Yeah, like, I'm trying to think of how things would be different if it hadn't come out, and I'm thinking, like, well, the next big thing after Akira was probably the Ghost in the Shell movie, and would we have gotten that if Akira hadn't been such a big hit?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I mean, Ghost in the Shell is nowhere near as exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it did definitely draw a lot of people in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's tough, like, from a legacy standpoint, it's a little difficult to suss that out, but I mean, it certainly was responsible for anime being perceived as super violent and for adults in the early going. And anime stayed that way through a lot of the 90s, you know, with stuff like Ninja Scroll, Wicked Slayer, yeah. Things like that. And then anime's reputation changed, and now it's kind of like something for teenagers. So, you know, Akira's legacy in terms of, like, introducing a whole shit ton of people to anime and getting people into it, that can't be denied. Anime is not Akira anymore. Like, it isn't representative of what anime is at all anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, in hindsight, I mean, things changed dramatically. So, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard, like,
to hypothesize how the 90s would have gone had Akira not existed.
Yeah, like, I feel like the boom of people that Akira brought in maybe kind of started to fade a little bit towards the end of the 90s, but it started up again with the rise of stuff like, say, Sailor Moon and with Dragon Ball, and that is a totally different crowd. So I don't know if the impact can be felt when you're like trying to find the overlap between those groups.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, but I get what you're saying. I totally understand what you're saying. Okay. Let's see. Jordan Cox 98 asks, do you think Akira deserves the title of greatest anime film of all time because of its influence? I personally don't. I mean, no. I don't think it's the greatest anime film of all time. I think it is one of the greatest anime films of all time, but it isn't the greatest.
If you can even determine a the...
Yeah, I mean, no, in my opinion, it's Princess Mononoke, but, like, I have an answer to that question. but I don't know.
I have problems with determining, like, a the best, the whatever, in terms of film in general, but that's just me.
Well, I have my favorite. And
yeah.
I think
favorite's fine, yeah.
And my favorite is what I associate with, well, this is the best one. So I guess I'm just not too concerned about hedging so that people understand, like, oh, this is just my favorite. Like, no, when I say it's the best,
I guess it's harder for me because my favorite is the Utena movie, and I know that's not a perfect movie by far.
Well, that's like that would be like my number two. That used to be my number one until I realized, no, it's Princess Mononoke. But Utena is an easy number two for me. So, yeah. And that's like, that's, talk about like impenetrable.
Yeah. I used to have very complicated feelings about that movie, and to a degree I still do. But I definitely respect it a lot more than I used to when I was younger, I think.
Well, we'll do a podcast in Utena.
Yeah, we'll do that some other time.
Someday we will do Utena. But, to be frank, I don't know that many people who do. I think in the in sort of mainstream consciousness, Akira is kind of like, oh, well, that's the anime movie. That's the violent anime movie. So that's what people know. Like, everyone knows Akira. But I don't know. Like, I don't personally know. I don't think anyone. I'm sure a lot of people will tell me, well, if I do, like, after this comes out. But I don't really know anyone that says, like, Akira is the greatest anime film of all time. Like, I feel like everyone would say, well, that's very important, and you should watch it, and it's an extremely significant film. But in my opinion, the best is whatever, some other thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's sort of the norm. If that makes sense. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Finally, Exeter Nova asks, do you think there should be an animated sequel or a remake of Akira to fill in the plot points from the manga left out by the original? So this kind of gets brought up a lot, and it's like, well, should they do a TV series or an OVA series or a series of films or whatever to adapt the full manga? Because certainly the movie doesn't cover really that much of the manga at all.
Yeah.
It covers a very small percentage of it. I mean, I don't know if the time for that is now. I don't know if the time for that has passed. Otomo's art style is outdated at this point, and I'm not sure.
And it's like, would you retain that, or would you try to update it somehow? And that would just kind of feel wrong, but then if you keep it, then who's gonna watch it? Who's a current anime fan?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I feel like it's one of those things that would get hyped up a lot and then would ultimately be disappointing, like, sales-wise and viewership-wise.
Mm-hmm. It would kind of feel like just a cash-in, a nostalgia cash-in at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd probably have to wait a longer period of time where it's like, okay, this movie was made a long time ago and it was important way back then. Let's see if we can make it relevant in a modern context. That sort of more noble approach to a remake than say, hey, people remember this, right?
Yeah, right. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I think that live action version like might actually get off the ground at some point. Like, they appear.
I'm not holding my breath.
But if they do, I'm very curious to see it. I'm curious what it would turn out to be like. If they did an Akira TV show, I would be interested. But, the odds that I would watch it week to week are pretty low. And I feel like that's the reason that no one's doing it, is because they kind of understand, you know what? It seems like that's a no-brainer. But if you think about it more, you're like, well, who's the audience for that? Is it modern anime fans? Because I don't think it is.
I think
it's just old-timers. Like, it's just people maybe a little older than me.
I don't know. As far as, like, seeing Akira adapted, I'd say probably the most successful one I can think of in part at least is that movie Chronicle that came out. I think there's a lot of very obvious homages to Akira in that movie, and I don't know if a live action Akira would satisfy my need to see live action Akira the way those scenes in Chronicle have.
I have not seen Chronicle, but that's interesting. I didn't know about the parallels there.
Oh god, yeah, it's definitely like disaffected young person with an inferiority complex suddenly gets way too much power, and even the ending scene, he's like flying around the city in a hospital gown and everything.
I see. Yeah. Well, that's fun. okay. So, all right. I guess that actually wraps it up. Hey, thanks a lot for coming on and going through these two kind of beautifully animated, convoluted, sort of messily scripted classics with me. I appreciate it.
Best theme. Thanks for having me on, Zach.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Aaron for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check about it at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.